Hey friends, you're in for a treat. There's a brand new book out called Manufactured Crisis, The War to End America by author James Simpson, our guest today. And his website is crisisnow.net. Get ready for this one on Worldview Matters.
Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
What a blessing, friends, to get to talk to the people I get to talk to and interview. And it's always inspiring, encouraging, sometimes challenging, and very informative. So James Simpson is an investigative journalist, businessman, and former economist and budget examiner for the White House Office of Management and Budget. Since 1995, he's written nonfiction articles for various periodicals based both on his experiences in government and business. And Mr. Simpson is best known for his expose on the Cloward-Piven strategy of manufactured crisis. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. His work provided background for Glenn Beck's TV series on the subject, if you remember that. He's also featured, and this is how I got to know James, through Curtis Bowers and the Agenda Grinding America Down documentaries, plus Trevor Loudon's The Enemy Within. We've had Trevor on the podcast and Enemies Within the Church. James Simpson has worked, he's been published, actually, Washington Times, World Net Daily, The Federalist, American Thinker, Accuracy in Media, Breitbart, Daily Caller, and it goes on and on. His website, again, friends, look this up. It's crisisnow.net, crisisnow.net. James Simpson, welcome to Worldview Matters, brother. Good to see you.
Hey, David. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. I thought we had talked to you in the last couple of years, but it's been probably 3-4 years when I was doing a radio talk show, and we talked about some of your previous work. But I'm excited. This book is much needed, I believe. I'm thinking of the southern border crisis and so many other things, Black Lives Matter, Global Network Foundation, everything else, the Marxism in America. But let's just start with why you decided to write this now, because you've been talking about this and writing about this for decades, and now the book. So is there are people more receptive to learning about our history? Why do you think you started this and you're writing this book now?
Well, you know, the last 4 years have brought to public attention just how crazy the American left today, which is represented by the Democrat Party, unfortunately, how crazy they really have become. And it was critical because I honestly believed and still believe that this was our last chance. This election was our last chance to save our country. If they had won, they would have put in place mechanisms that would have determined a permanent, quote unquote, progressive majority for the foreseeable future. And that, frankly, would have meant a communist future for the United States of America. And it would not be one led simply by Kamala Harris or any other prominent Democrat. The communist Chinese would move in, the Russians would move in, and we would soon find ourselves in the situation that people in those countries found out in very horrific ways that they had gotten themselves into. So I felt it was really important to write a book that captured all of the different kinds of strategies that they have been using. And they're not new. They're 100 years or more old, but they've become very visible, really more visible in the last 4 years than at any other time. But for those of us who have been paying attention, these kinds of things have been around since the 1960s.
So, James, for those of us who would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, yeah, I don't think most Americans realize what kind of future this nation would have if the left maintained power, if Kamala Harris or whoever else is behind the, you know, the scenes pulling the strings, if Donald Trump would not have been reelected. I don't think people realize, and if that's true in saying that, why do you suppose that is? Is it an ignorance of our history, of world history? Why do you think that is?
Oh, it's because the radical left, first represented by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, have made the destruction of capitalism, and more accurately, destruction of the Western Judeo-Christian culture and way of life, their primary goal since the Communist Manifesto was written in 1848. And that hasn't changed. And it is ironic because, as I point out in the book, first of all, their economics. I majored in economics. I taught economics at a university level and practiced economics in the White House budget office. Communist economics, socialist economics doesn't work. People might think it works, and it lasts for a little while, but why does it last? It's because the wealth of Western society shores it up. You know, the great secret of communist nations, that includes both Russia and China, is that they have been kept alive, they have been kept going by the United States. And it's either through purchasing their products. In the case of China, we stupidly moved much of our manufacturing capability over there. Yeah. And all we got out of it was inexpensive labor. But in return for that, they got markets, they got marketing methods, they got manufacturing methods. Neither Russia nor China knew how to create an assembly line. Russia used to steal them. Russia used to covertly import them through third countries from the United States just so they could have assembly line. They didn't know how to make them. And so we gave them all this know-how, all this technology, a markets, a distribution center, products that are winning, and all we got in return was cheap labor. And then they began ripping us off for all the other things and creating the same kinds of products under their own name, undercutting our own. So, you know, we really messed ourselves up. But the funny thing is, regardless, they still require United States markets and the United States to consumer to stay alive. If our country goes down, the entire world economy goes down because we have kept the entire world economy alive and prospering to the extent that it's able to, in spite of the best efforts of the communists.
So, James, I know you're not a prophet, but would you care to speculate on how maybe the next 4 years might go? Can you give us an idea of what your thoughts are under the Trump administration? Because there's a lot of damage has been done already. Marxism is deeply rooted in our country, in our government, and there's a lot of damage has been done, but it's not over yet. Can you give us some of your perspective on that?
Well, I think that President Trump is going to do a lot to fix the economy very quickly. And, you know, I always go back to the World War II example when our federal debt was 125% of our GDP, and it's a little more than that now. And we grew ourselves right out of that after World War II with very little problem. Of course, at that time, we were the only truly functioning economy that's still in existence because all of the other ones had been destroyed by World War II. But there are similarities here as well as differences. And the similarities are that, you know, because of Democrat policies, we have turned into a country that charges some of the highest taxes to businesses. So they've all fled overseas. Trump reversed that in 2016, and we saw for the first time since the 70s, companies coming back to the United States, hiring Americans, and even giving Americans bonuses, you know, which Nancy Pelosi ridiculed. Oh, they're only getting $2,000 to $5,000. And then at the same time, they were talking about how wonderful they were to give Americans a tax, paltry tax cut that didn't amount to anything like that. So, but that's what he was able to do in those 4 years, despite being battled against daily by people, even including people in his own party. He is going to not face so many headwinds from his own party this time, although there are some already trying to make trouble for him. But it's not nearly as bad as it was before because his victory was so overwhelming.
Yes.
So much a mandate that I think even people who disagree with him are going to be hesitant to try to go up against him with such, you know, with such widespread support. So there are a lot of things he can do that will help us to grow out of that massive debt. I think it surpasses $35 trillion now that Joe Biden got us into. It's outrageous. And then we have, of course, the unfunded liabilities of Social Security, which are over $130 trillion.
Wow.
And, you know, but there's lots of ways to get out of those things. And it can all be done. And the key is to restore economic growth to our economy, reduce taxes, remove taxes in many of the cases, especially where they prevent us from investing and growing our economy the way we could otherwise. You know, the capital gains tax, for example, I think it should be zero. I think it should be zero. We would have an explosion of new investment, new growth, new business, and we could grow ourselves out of this. So it really depends on what he's able to do. But the good thing is that he knows what needs to be done.
That's right. It'll be a crazy ride, wild ride for the next 4 years. Our seatbelts are fastened. Our guest is James Simpson. The book is Manufactured Crisis. You can check out some of the 5-star ratings on Amazon or his website, crisisnow.net. So, James, few could have imagined 10 years ago where we'd be in America today. And you write, America is facing mounting crises from all directions, deliberately manufactured by our enemies, both within and without, to destroy America once and for all. So how does the Cloward-Piven strategy play into this? I know you read a lot about that.
Well, the Cloward-Piven strategy is a major component of this. It's really interesting, though. Cloward and Piven didn't come up with the idea of manufacturing crises. I quote Lenin earlier in the book where he said, you know, create as many crises as you can, or if you can't create them, convincingly tell people that they exist and then magnify them to the extent you can. And then benefit from them in every way you can, including financially, which, as we know, they do. And then blame everything on our enemies. Blame the other side for all the things that they create, and then provide solution that will create even more crises that we then exploit in the future until the capitalist society is destroyed. And that is the best summary I've ever heard of the crisis strategy. But Cloward and Piven put it into action with very specific tactics. And the first one was to use the new welfare system created by President Lyndon Johnson under the Great Society program that radically expanded welfare. And one thing that I bring out in the book that most people, well, people that have even heard of Cloward and Piven don't know, that it was Richard Cloward who inspired Johnson to create the Great Society in the first place. And now this is really interesting, because the Cloward-Piven strategy was to take all of these newly created welfare benefits and then try to pack the rolls of the welfare system with as many beneficiaries as they could, collecting every single benefit to which they were entitled, which they believed, if they could accomplish that, would collapse the system.
Yep.
And then in the ashes, they would create their quote unquote solution, which was a guaranteed annual income, which is, by the way, now being tried out in pilot programs around the country, although it's called universal basic income. But at that time, it was proposed to be what would in today's dollars be equivalent to between $40,000 and $80,000 per family of four. So everybody getting that kind of money, you could work or you could not work. Now, here's the big question. Okay, we're talking about, I quote Lenin saying, create post solutions that will create even bigger crises. Well, that does that, because which do you think is more expensive? The plethora of welfare benefits we have now, or a guaranteed annual income for all families in the United States, which would be magnitudes more money. And so the real goal is to totally collapse the system.
Wow.
And then in the process, take over and then rule as the communists that they have always been.
Yeah.
And everything else is a pretext. All of this welfare. And I have a chapter in the book titled Weaponizing the Poor, the War Against Black America.
Oh.
And it's a really important chapter, because it describes how Cloward and Piven explicitly said that they wanted to use the poor, primarily blacks in inner city communities, as their street revolutionaries to promote their takeover of our country. And
wow.
How do you do that? How do you do that? You do that by making people really angry. And they said they wanted to do that. And so their idea with the welfare program was to create so many problems that the welfare system would collapse. But in the meantime, people had become dependent on it. So if they suddenly found they couldn't get their welfare, they'd be rioting in the streets. So that was the goal for that. And
wow.
Then in the meantime, it did not work really as well as they expected it to. You know, that's one thing I think that always shocks the left, is just how resilient our economy, the free market economy, can be. You know, when they put in one block, the free market economy just finds one way around it. And then they put in another block, we find another way around it. And that's the way the market works. And so, but what was I going to say? So they wanted people angry. And of course, they wanted people ignorant. So in the public education system,
yep.
Today's public education system in inner cities, for example, in Baltimore, near where I live, the 60% of the people graduating from high school can't read or can't write.
Yep.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And yet they are paying some of the highest rates per student of any state in the nation.
Yep.
And all they are learning is things like critical race theory and Black Lives Matter propaganda, things
yep.
like that, which just stokes the fires of resentment, racial resentment, which is what, again, what they wanted to do. You know, our race relations, we have handled race relations. We're a model for the world. The world looks to us on how to handle race relations because we've had to do so, and we've done a good job with it, despite all of the myriad efforts of the left. But they find fault, and then they create faults where there aren't any, and then they exaggerate, just like Lenin said in the beginning. And so that's their goal. They want angry, oppressed people feeling they can't go anywhere, because those are the only kind of people they can use. They can, a happy, prosperous people are not going to be looking to them for answers. That's the whole goal.
So, James, let's talk about ACORN and the motor voter law. I remember during the Obama administration, even before that, when he was a community organizer, I think those words weren't even uttered in much of America until he was running for president, and people were looking in, some people were looking into his background, the community organizing he did in Chicago. And I know we've just got like 6.5 minutes left, but give us a brief background of ACORN. And I know Cloward was connected with that, and then the motor voter law and what they were trying to do with that.
Well, Wade Rathke was the founder of ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now. And he was an former SDS, Students for a Democratic Society radical. And he had worked with Richard Cloward on the National Welfare Rights Organization, which was created nationwide to pack the welfare rolls and initiate their first round of crisis strategies. So Wade was mentored by Richard Cloward, and then he subsequently created ACORN when the National Welfare Rights Organization died. And so ACORN picked up the same welfare agenda. They proposed a $15 minimum wage. They continued to propose guaranteed annual income. And they've been successful, because now looking around, we have states that are passing $15, even $20 minimum wage laws. This is all directly the result of, or indirectly the result of, Cloward Piven's actions. But the next thing they focused on was voting. And they created, after 10 years of study and suing various organizations till they got sympathetic judges, to basically turn the federal government and state governments into voter registration organizations for the left. And it was called the National Voter Registration Act, which we know as Motor Voter, which allows people, well, people automatically get registered to vote when they go get their driver's license, which means that a lot of illegal aliens get driver's licenses. They go to welfare offices, they go to libraries, and different states have been sued by the radical left because they're not enthusiastically enough registering new voters. And of course, the only people who are going to register there are the poor people who are coming to get these services. And so they have nationalized the voter registration effort. And that was the goal. And at the same time, they made it very much more difficult for people to clean the voter rolls, while at the same time they're packing the voter rolls with duplicates, with people who weren't legitimate voters. You know, even legal aliens who could get driver's license, they're not allowed to vote. You have to be a U.S. citizen. But we have millions of dead people on the rolls, millions of people. It's a catastrophe. And that was their next crisis strategy. And then the one after that, of course, was the subprime mortgage meltdown, which was done deliberately by the Clinton administration, knowingly that it was going to collapse the economy.
You know, there's so much that goes into this idea of manufactured crisis. James, I would love to have you back to continue this conversation, because the time went by so fast. And there were some very important points in the book about, like, for example, the NAACP started by white socialists. And we didn't even touch on illegal immigration, the right. border crisis. That's manufactured. That's the biggest there. It's one. All to overwhelm the system, right? Speak right. to that for another for about a minute or so, and then we've got to close.
Yeah. Clarendon Piven's idea was to use different tactics to overwhelm the system with demands for services. And what could do more than opening the border and then giving illegal aliens benefits that a lot of Americans can't get? And that just spending money. We look at what happened in North Carolina and Hurricane Helene. Those places are still a wreck. FEMA hasn't gone near them, and their excuse is why? Oh, well, we spent all our money on the illegal aliens and on Ukraine, you know? So it's these wow. kinds of things that they've been working on and doing deliberately as a way to sabotage our economy. And next time, perhaps, we can talk about how they have been working to sabotage our culture, because that was another element of exactly.
Yep, the LGBTQ, the cultural Marxism, the transgender ideology. James, thank you so much for the book. I ordered it on Amazon. People can go to crisisnow.net, or you can go right to Amazon and get the book and look up Manufactured Crisis. Check out the 5-star reviews. Brother, we do have to continue this. There's so much more information. But thanks for your time today. Really good to reconnect with you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, David.
You're most welcome, James. All right, guys. Again, you got to get the book, and you'll know more about it next time we talk with James Simpson. Guys, thank you again for sharing the podcast as well. We're hearing great things. Not anything I'm doing necessarily. The guests that we get to talk to and interview, they bring in their expertise, and that's why one of the reasons the podcast is growing. And under God's providence and sovereignty, thank you for sharing, and of course for your donations. The fundraiser went very, very well. Continue to give us 5-star reviews on Apple and Spotify, and remember to subscribe to our new YouTube channel. God bless you, and as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.